Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Joey Galvez. I want to tell you guys a little bit about the Department of MetaHuman Affairs. This one is a story about a team led by a retired sidekick, two felons, a failed actor from Broadway, and a reprogrammed cyborg. But their first mission is to stop the criminals who have robbed a bank, and they will have to set the world at ease. You're going to get 180 pages of entertainment, action-packed awesomeness right here in the first six issues in a collected hardcover volume one. All you got to do is head on over to Kickstarter.com and type in the Department of MetaHuman Affairs or DMA and check it out right now. We are a proud member of the 143 Podcast Network, affiliated with Age of Radio. Hey, how's it going, everybody? This is Joey Galvez, and you are listening to the House of Indie Podcast. And I'm sitting here with Casey Pierce. How's it going, Casey?
It's going excellent. Very, very well. I think this is the first time I've done a podcast in the morning. Oh, I like it, though. I like it.
Yeah, you are a little bit of ahead of us. You're a couple, well, like I think, what, like 3 hours ahead of me. So you've already had breakfast, and you've already kind of had a nice amount of time of your day. I'm just waking up.
I feel for you with the child thing, you know, your 2-year-old getting you up like he's like a rooster.
yeah. We talked a little bit before we went on air. I've got a 2-year-old who wakes me up every morning at 5 a.m. And I told you anytime that I can get some kind of sleeping in, I cherish that.
Right. I like that this podcast is in the morning, though, because I'm one of those writers, too, where I know a lot of writers like to write at night. Uh-huh. I don't. I think first thing in the morning when I'm fresh, before any sort of value judgment or anxiety can clutter my mind.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's just rolling. I'm like, it's fresh. Let's go. And then by nighttime, you know, because I go to bed early so I can get up early so I can work out. And then I'm high on pre-workout. And then I'm at the computer like, ah!
Yeah.
You know, writing all these crazy stories that you just read.
Yeah, I can completely understand that, because, you know, you go throughout the day and a lot's going on. You don't want that to kind of, you know, transport into your work sometimes. I mean, sometimes it could be good, too. So you can use that.
Right.
Awesome. So tell us a little bit about your work. I know I've read Nora, and we were talking about that a little bit, that I read it last night. And I told myself I was going to read just issue one just to familiarize myself with your work. I couldn't put it down, and I read the whole stinking thing.
I'm so glad you enjoyed it. And like I said, I attribute that to Sean Seal's work, how he makes it flow.
Yeah.
And you'll see in volume two, Kelly O'Hara does the same thing. No panels, no gutters. And it's also sort of written for cinema. And that wasn't on purpose. You know, it just has that cinematic flow. So, yeah, you just want to keep reading, and I'm so glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. The pacing was very well done, and along with the writing, it definitely flows very well, and it made me like that first issue, number one, it was right on the edge of my seat every time that I read it, or every time that I went forward and I got to that point where it's like, to be continued. I was like, no, I gotta continue this. I don't care if it's super late. I have to.
Oh, that's so awesome. The funny thing is the to be continued thing, it's one of those things that you look back later in your career and you're like, why did I do that? You know, it's like one of those things that you would change, but I mean, you can't now, you know, because look at in my early career, because I was asked to write a comic, and it was never my intention. I had never even seen a comic script. So to me, everything was film-like, you know, even though I'd read comics. That's why Nora 1 is such a slow burn, because to me, it's the first 10 minutes of a film. So I'm like, oh, we should add it to be continued. And then I'm like, oh, Casey, come on, man. It's cringeworthy 5 years later, but what are you going to do? You know,
you're your own worst
critic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's definitely true. I I do the same thing every day. I'm like, oh man, I shouldn't have said that in that interview. What the heck? And then I've got people like, dude, that was such a good interview. I was like, no, I sounded like a freaking amateur, man.
they don't even notice.
And that's, you know? And that's what it is. A lot of people, when you are so hard on yourself, it's usually just you and your own self inside your own brain thinking those things, because yeah, you're right. Nobody noticed those hiccups or any of those kinds of things that you're like, oh, I shouldn't have done that. I messed up there or something like that.
Right. Like I'm in school right now, and I was for business, and cool. I was the team leader of a group presentation. Of course, a group presentation we have to give during COVID. So it's all online. We got to compile all these videos.
That's fun.
And
right?
A lot of, you're right. I know. And a lot of these students, they weren't speakers. They just weren't. Some of them had trouble with the language. There was a language barrier too. So what I kept trying to reassure them is like, listen, if you mess up, don't acknowledge the mess up. Don't stop. Mm-hmm. Just keep going. I guarantee their mind's going to make up for that hiccup and they're not even going to notice it. Just keep going.
Yeah. That's I had to learn that the hard way. I'm doing this for a little while. That's definitely true. Okay, so I need to know, you talked a little bit about how you've never even seen the comic strip. You never even seen comics, or I need to know what your actual background was before you got into this.
Well, I was a fan of comics. You know, I read comics. I'd never seen a script before.
Okay.
So when I first started writing, I was a blogger. And I was doing snarky commentary on the Comic-Con scene, comic reviews. It was kind of like almost like an animated character. So we're talking about like crayons to perfume with my career here. And I was doing artist interviews, you know, like yourself, you know, podcasts, you know, what have you. And I was known as Cosmic Casey. And that's why Facebook.com/CosmicCasey is my writer page. And I started blogging a chapter a month of a science fiction called The Prophecy Effect. Now, I'd never written fiction before. And Tony Maiello of Rocket Ink Studios had become a fan of it, had started following it. And he said, I think based on this, that you can write horror. And I said, I don't write fiction. That's really not what I do. This is all just me playing around. And he's like, no, pitch me something. Pitch me a 4-page story. So I did. And that became Dollface in the first release of Pieces of Madness. And it's a prose. Now, it's funny when I go back and read reviews of Pieces, you know, people say, oh, I absolutely love these stories, except what happened with Dollface? Well, it was the first story I'd ever written. So it's a little weak. I put it in the middle on purpose. So it just kind of gets lost in the shuffle. But then it was, you know, it was 5 short stories of the insane, cultist, and paranormal. It was a bit of a gore piece, but it was all based on my personal experiences, my fears growing up in a Bible-centric home. And it was just different, a lot of emphasis on the human condition. So it started to gain a subterranean following, which I didn't expect, but I really appreciate. And I was selling out of it at Comic-Cons.
Wow.
This little book of 5 short stories, low-res cover. You know, I mean, it could have been easily dismissed, but it wasn't. And so that caught the eye of Travis McIntyre, editor-in-chief of Sourcepoint Press, who had just taken over as editor-in-chief. Now, I was friends with the original proprietors, Joshua Werner, who is now our art director, and Trico Luckins. So we all knew each other, kind of like a brat pack in Michigan.
Okay.
And he said, hey, girl, I need you to pitch me a comic, because you can see it. I was selling like a madman.
Yeah.
And I said, I don't write comics. It's not what I really do. I write prose, you know, this shitty little 5-story book. And he said, just pitch me something, anything. And so I had the honor and privilege of knowing the late, great Gary Reed of Caliber Comics before he passed away.
Okay.
And I had a chance to look at a Dead World script. Mm-hmm. And I was reading it. And I'm like, so it's kind of like a movie, right? So again, that's why first issue of Nora is like a slow burn, like the first 10 minutes of a film. And it's nonlinear. And I didn't mean to write it that way, but here we are. There's nothing really we can do to change that. Mm-hmm. But and the rest is history. Like Nora was the prophecy effect narrowed down to the main character.
Wow. That's pretty awesome. For those of our listeners out there who don't know what Nori is, can you give a quick log line of what that is?
Sure. Nora is X-Files meets Starship Troopers. It's about a woman who has the ability to delve into the mind's eye in the event of your a comatose state, very similar to the cell. And she obtains this ability while working in pathogenic development for the CIA, creating bioweapons.
Yes, when I first saw that, I was like, "Oh, this is such a cool story, and it's really unique." And as I kept reading, I was wondering, I was like, "Did she have to do a lot of research in this?" So I want to know, how much research did you have to do for this? Because there's a lot of medical terminology and all that stuff in here. And I was like, "Well, I don't know if I could ever do that kind of research myself. That's a lot."
Yeah, you know, it was some really disturbing stuff. You know, thank God I listened to a lot of NPR because I became obsessed with what the CIA does, black bag missions and so forth.
Yeah.
But in terms of research, now I have a background in anatomy and pathology, okay. Limited, but I do. So the bioweapon thing is based on real science, just a little bit suspended, because I don't actually know if this would work out. I know that these things will do these things to your white blood cells, your nervous system. I'm obsessed with the nervous system as well. It's one of my passions. When I was 26, I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis.
Okay.
And I went on this mission to sort of find out why I have what I had, or at least have more of an understanding of this disease. And so that started my nervous system obsession. So a lot of it is based on things maybe that are already new, a lot of research, a little bit of suspending belief, but it's all rooted in real science.
That's awesome. So this story here is such an interesting premise here. And I need to know what inspired such a unique story.
So here in the Midwest, about 5-6 years ago, we had ice storms. And I remember being in my one-bedroom apartment at the time, and everything's frozen. I'm talking the windows. I was driving a Ford Fiesta at the time, which is angled down like this. So the hole underneath was just a block of ice.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
We would have to rock the car every morning just to go anywhere. So really, a lot of us were barricaded in our homes, kind of like we are now.
Yeah.
Right. When I started to write The Prophecy Effect, which became Nora, I imagined a woman who kind of looked like Nora Jones, just sort of creeping around in the dark, you know, sort of looking for something. I'm like, what is she looking for? And then I just suddenly thought, you know, a coma. And she, I'm like, she's in someone's coma. She's trying to get somebody out. What does a coma look like? Well, to me, it's somewhere cold and desolate between life and death, almost like a universal purgatory. Mm-hmm. And I remember I was listening to a very haunting instrumental, which I still use to write to this day. It's nice. Called Something Happened Here. And you can find it on YouTube. And it's by Tim, shoot. I think his artist name is Lunz, Lunz.
Okay.
But yeah, I remember it was just out of not sheer boredom. It was out of passion too. But yeah, it was another part in my life where I was sort of pushed or forced to do something, and I did it, and it was successful. So I'm very grateful for that.
That's such a cool thing. I always, there's a question that I always ask everyone that I have on the show, and maybe my listeners are bored of it already, but I like to know because it gives me a little bit of insight into the brain of our creators that are on the show. Right. And so what is your creative process? I know you use some music. A lot of that's kind of, universal with a lot of the creators as well, but what else do you do? Is there anything else other than just music?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Normally, especially with my prose, like in horror, you'll notice that I bold the first line.
Okay.
A lot of things start out with a line that I heard from somebody else. I'm just constantly listening to my friends, people, people online at Starbucks, anything that just sort of catches my ear. Uh-huh. For example, when I wrote Luke for Pieces of Madness, my friend who does a lot of tarot readings and soul retrieval, she's a shaman, all that stuff. And I said, what got you interested in occult practices? And she said, I grew up haunted. And I stopped her right there because I wanted to hold on to that. And I wanted to answer that question of what does it mean to grow up haunted? That's really interesting and thought provoking. So thought provoking things that real people say sometimes is based on real people. But yeah, definitely real life experiences.
So, would you say that Nora grew up haunted?
Yes, she is haunted by her past.
Okay.
And it's interesting because Nora carries sort of this, she's mercenary, right? I mean, she's, you know, from the CIA, she was trained to be that way. But she's also has the sort of level of stoicism where she, it's not that she's emotionless. I think she's misunderstood by the people around her. You saw in the first issue what she said to a father who was like, well, thank you. I don't know what we would do without our daughter. And she just straight up says, well, you'd figure it out.
Yeah.
And it sounds very dickish to say that to a father who's so glad his daughter is safe. But she means it, you know, you would have to press on. So people think she's emotionless when really she's just trying to reserve, she's trying to keep on a lid on her tragic past, and she's trying to make sense of everything without getting too overwhelmed.
Yeah, I think it has to do with a lot of what she's going through as well. You know, I don't want to give a lot of away to anybody who hasn't read it yet. So we'll kind of keep a lid on that one for a little bit. Excuse the difference in the audio. This was a pre-recorded episode before I took a break. I forgot it was such a cool episode, but let's take a quick break right here. And then when we come back, we'll jump right back into the episode as it continues. So tell us, is there any other work that you've worked on since Nora?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So Cirrus came out after the first volume of Nora, and Cirrus is my fun series. They are right now three self-contained one shots. It's awesome. Norse mythology meets the craft in the style of heavy metal. Oh, there's sexy, so cool, gory Viking witch fables. Just Viking witches kicking ass on the southern shores of Iceland. Sorry, totally a Mary Sue, but I just wanted to have some fun. And it's also rooted in, you know, real folklore and, you know, Viking history. And also, I created some new folklore as well. For instance, the third one, Turcon and the Great Divide, is about a demonic tree, you know? And so I had so much fun with that. Now that's illustrated by Jay Jacot. I call him a one man show because he can do it all. And he is his own project manager. And I just cannot say enough about Jay Jacot. But yeah, so we will do a Kickstarter for that coming up soon, which will feature a bonus story. So there will be four self-contained stories, but you will see reoccurring characters. So you don't have to collect all of them, but it's fun too.
That's super cool. And it sounds like you did a lot of research for that story as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Also, I did, so Rocketing Studios will soon be putting out Mishika, which I wrote actually 6 years ago. And, Mishika is, I like to say, Mexican Conan the Barbarian.
Okay.
So it's rooted in, and the basis, the catalyst for that was John Marroquin, the illustrator, coming to me with this idea that he's had for, you know, 20 years, but he didn't know what to do with it. And when he was telling me about this movement that was happening with those indigenous to the Americas in the Valley of Mexico, Aztec, the name Aztec is a Spaniard given name. Mm-hmm. And they were like, we have always been Mexicas. And there was this movement happening online. And so he inspired me with that. And after a long meeting at Gizmos in Wyandotte, I said, so you're looking for sword and sorcery. You're looking for Mexican Conan. He goes, yeah, I think so. So we gave him an origin story. So that should be coming out soon. I'll let everybody know.
Yeah.
Called Mishika.
That sounds like a super cool one.
Had to do a lot of research for that because I was nervous. I'm representing a culture that is not my own. So I had to know where I could sort of bend and where I absolutely could not. So that took a whole summer.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So did you have a whole lot of fun researching that? No.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It was really cool.
I find when I look into like different cultures that are not my own, it like opens up a part of my brain that I'm just like, and it excites me and I'm just like, whoa, this is so cool. I want to know more. Mm-hmm. Was that the same for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I was fascinated. I think that's the perfect word for it. Yeah. Just fascinated.
Yeah, super cool, man. That one sounds a whole lot of fun. So, this world is crazy right now. So, what have you been doing while you're locked down?
I've been going to school. Okay. I'm going to school for a business admin. I'm about a year away from my bachelor's.
Sweet.
And that's awesome. I also got my meditation teacher certificate. So wow. I do that too. I've been doing a lot of editing as Red Pen Media.
Okay.
So I am an editor as well. And I absolutely loving it. I love my clients. And just the other day, we started the wheels in motion on our next project, which will be what I like to call my magnum opus. I feel like my whole life has been leading up to this book called The Other People Who Live Here.
Whoa, that sounds intriguing already. I won't pry on that one a little bit. I'll leave that one.
No, that's okay. We can talk about it. We can talk about it limited, but I can let you know what it's about.
Yeah, sure. Let everybody know what it's about.
So we're still going back and forth between, do we want to do single issues or a one-shot trade? We're thinking single just because it's better to, for marketing-wise, you know, building an audience that way. But The Other People Who Live Here is a paranormal space opera about Alzheimer's.
Wow.
And yeah.
That sounds so cool.
Thank you. You know, I think my mother has Alzheimer's. So when that happened, you know, you think you know what it's like to take care of someone with Alzheimer's and really you have no idea until you actually do. And I was like, these caretakers don't get a chance to really tell their stories because these are things that we don't talk about in polite conversation.
Yeah.
So not only did I want to address what the patient goes through, but what the family goes through as well. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to put a positive spin on it. So The Other People Who Live Here, something my mom often says and what dementia patients often say, because they're seeing people, you know, ghosts, for lack of a better term, of people they've never even known in their waking life.
Wow.
So I thought, wouldn't that be great if they were a Starfleet?
Yeah, that's super interesting. And that's really interesting because I've never really spoken to anybody or researched Alzheimer's. And that's really interesting that you say that, that they see that different people. And I kind of feel like, you know, if my mind was going, I kind of feel like that kind of empty, kind of like what's going on around me. What are all these people doing in my area? It's really scary.
Scary.
And I just couldn't imagine what people go through with that. And I'm glad you put a little positive spin on it because that can go dark real quick, especially if it's something that is in your life and you just don't want to go down that rabbit hole.
Right. Right. So it was a great coping mechanism too.
Yeah.
And JJ Cap will be illustrating that as
awesome.
Well, edited by David Hayes. And of course, David Hayes created one of our most popular titles that became a film called Rotten Tail.
Awesome. Awesome. This is great. I love all this stuff because it all sounds like it's all up my alley. So I have to stay connected with you so that I can read all this work. This is really great. So,
thank you.
Okay. Another thing that we always do here, and because of the state of our crazy industry and our crazy favorite medium right now, and how nuts it is, and it's all twisted upside down. How do you see the future of comics? Do you see obviously in a direction for somewhere great for indie creatives? What do you see? How do you see the mainstream doing?
I think that it's going to, after all of this, it's going to hand back power to the retailers. So I see it as a massive cleanse. Like, let's take conventions, for example. Mm-hmm. I love doing conventions. I love direct sales. But let's face it, it was a really oversaturated market. Mm-hmm. So I think once we come back, it's going to be a whole new landscape, and it's going to trim a little bit of the fat there, because some people have been under the impression that wherever you set up chairs and tables and invite your friends, where you had your cousin's baby shower, that's a Comic-Con. And so the general public, you know, thinks, well, I just went to a Comic-Con last week. Why should I go to Motor City Comic-Con? And it's like, no, you really didn't. You went to like an expo, which is fine.
Yeah.
But it was really spreading us thin, publishers thin, and the entire market. So I think it's going to give power back by having less conventions, more store visits, more intimacy between a creator and writer and retailer. So I think that when we come back, it's going to get a little bit back to more traditional distribution, and give power back to the retailers. That's what I'm really hoping for.
Yeah, I think so. I think I have to agree with that, because talking to a handful of people who I know own shops and stuff like that, they're a little wary of the way they're doing things. But I think if we give the power back to them, it would change significantly, especially the way that things are distributed, the things that we receive, and the way we receive them. And I think that's, I think if we, as fans of this medium, we need to take charge and say, no, we want it this way. And this is the way it should have been from the very beginning. We don't want you guys to dictate how we get this, and how it's just, we need to take charge of it. And I think I agree with you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Fans need to take the market back.
Yeah,
they really do, you know, away from these big guys who just, you know, I mean, everything is so film centric and all about the almighty dollar, and like not seeing the value in the creators, but like, what's selling right now. And really they're shooting themselves in the foot, because they're only trying to assume what's selling, and they're spoon feeding the same crap. You know, it's all rehashes, and people are tired of that.
And
thank God that they were focused on that, because SourcePoint Press came in with a lint roller, and you know, those people that were tired of rehashes were like, well, we have really original stories, and guess what? We'll let you meet the creators. You'll get these things signed, and you'll feel like you're a part of the journey, because you are, because without you, there is no us.
Right. Exactly. I that's what I've been saying for the longest time. That's how it is. And we need to take the market back. That's
absolutely,
I think we can end there. Let's drop the mic. So let everybody who is listening know where they can find all your work and all your social media and all that good stuff.
Sure. And that is facebook.com/CosmicCasey, both with K's, Twitter @CosmicCasey, Instagram @KCDWrites, and Red Pen Media on Facebook. You can find me. And if you do have some editing inquiries, it's Casey, K-A-S-E-Y, redpen@gmail.com. Every comic script under $25, or 25 pages, is $75. That includes proofreading, content editing, and even a last look at letters.
Wow.
So if you are interested, reach out to me. And let's see, can you find me anywhere else? LinkedIn, you know, I'm on there too. So
super cool. That's really awesome that you put that service out there. That's really cool. Well, again, Casey, I appreciate you coming on and hanging out with me here on the House of Indie. We appreciate you. Everybody, you should go out there.
I appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm serious, guys. Go out there, check out her work. I am a new fan of Nora. I've got to grab volume 2 now, because
you
got
need
me hooked.
A shirt.
Yes.
You need a shirt.
I do.
Hey,
I love that
if
shirt.
You haven't, thank you. So Nora volume 2 issues 1-4 are now available in previews. So you can order it. Sorry, my haters went nuts. You can order it into your comic shop right now. But if you haven't caught up with the series, head on over to sourcepoint.press, and you can pick up the volume 1 trade and the snazzy t-shirt Yes, I wash this shirt. I know it seems like I wear it every day, but I got to promote. So that's probably only like, what, $30 total, something like that. Yeah, we're always running deals.
That's awesome. I'm the same way. I've got my podcast shirt on, and I'm like, I had to tell the people that printed my shirt. I was like, give me four of them because I need to wear it like every time I do interviews so that I'm wearing my brand.
Right. You got to. I really should have bought like three of these. Really, yeah. 'Cause I'm doing laundry like every day.
Yeah, that's not good on the bills, man. I understand that. My wife tells me all the time. She's like, I'm doing laundry like every day. Can you like please help? I'm like, oh my gosh. Yeah, I'll help. I help in the wrong way.
Well, you have a 2-year-old too. That's why you're doing laundry every day. Having costume changes every 3 minutes.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, that's not the only kid we have either. So we got.
Oh my god.
I've got a 17-year-old going on 18 very soon, and then I've got a 10-year-old, and then we have one on the way.
Oh my goodness! Again, congratulations.
Thank you.
Good gravy, folks.
Yeah. So. Ooh. It's a lot of work, but I love these dang kids. I love this family. So
that's wonderful.
But enough about me. Thank you, Casey, for hanging out with me. And go out, check her out, guys. Check out Nora, all her great books, all her awesome work. And if you got some really cool editing inquiries, hit her up. That's a really great affordable price. I can't believe how cheap you're doing that. That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, for a limited time, so who knows?
There you go. You know? I shouldn't
so
say,
get on it while it's hot.
I shouldn't say cheap. I should say inexpensive, because that's...
It's fine. I know what you mean.
All right. Thanks again for hanging out with me right here on the House of Indie.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the House of Indie. My name is Joey Galvez. I will see you later.
Can you say the House of Indie?
The house in there.